Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What time is it? Time for the weekly dish. I want fries on my pizza, the rabbit in a tortilla, barbecue from Korea. Yeah, it's a good idea. Dum, yuck, my yum. Yuck, yuck, my yum. Dum, yuck, my yum. Yuck, yuck, my yum.
Everybody, and welcome back to hour two of the Weekly Dish. Been kind of a weird show, but we're catching up on lots of different things. We gave you all the ideas of things to cook for spring.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about New York City and traveling. We talked a lot about aging and how old I really am and how old I really act like, which is 12. Mm-hmm. We have a Taste Buds that came out on Thursday of this week with Billy Sushi. And I thought about you because Ellie, who's on this station on Sundays with Katie K9, was on the show with me and taught me how to roll sushi. He had taught me too, but he had bought these, like, I don't know what they're called.
The tatami mats?
Yes. They're easier. Yeah. And like, so he was really sweet. But it was super fun to watch him break down a 250-pound tuna in his kitchen in literally like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It was crazy how fast it went.
Yeah.
And just... I can't even. It was so amazing to watch it. And then to do it with Ellie, it's a super fun episode. He's got a lot of energy. He's super fun. So check that out.
No, right. I know. That's really great.
We are in top two in hour two, telling you the things we're obsessed with.
Give him the 0-1-2. One, two, one, two.
And now the Weekly Dish presents
top two, top two.
The top two.
Pick your best two.
In hour two.
All right, give me two, winning.
All right, so some of the things that we cannot stop thinking about. I'm going to start with the fact that I'm super happy to announce that Lindsay Pollard is opening a new restaurant in Wayzata called Eloise.
Very excited about this.
I know, and I think it's really smart. And I chatted her up the other day, and it's really cool because, of course, Grocer's Table, I think, like I said, is one of the best things to happen to downtown Wayzata.
I love Grocer's Table,
and
too.
And it's so timely, and it's like, you know, it's a grab and go. You can meet for lunch, you can meet for wine, you can, you know, pop in and grab something and head out on the boat or just in your car, you know, whatever. And it's pretty delicious and flavorful and like, and modern, you know what I mean? But with not being snooty and weird. So I love the fact that they are so busy that they, you know, and what I love the fact that she said, I don't want to replicate Grocer's Table. I don't want this to be a chain. I want it to be its special thing that has been happening here and to continue that. But she decided to take over the space next door, Lululemon. And she wants to open something.
Is Lululemon moving out of Wayzata?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm just like, wait, that's such a...
Nor do I care. But they have... she's doing something a little darker, a little moodier. She's brought Shay back to do this. And she's going to open a dining.
Like
A fine dining without it being fine dining, you know? Rustic, approachable, seasonal, that whole thing.
I think I've told you guys this story before, but I have such a soft spot in my heart for her.
Oh, you do?
I do, because right after the pandemic, the first Thanksgiving after the pandemic, so... I guess that's like
2020.
A year. Yeah. I was doing something with pies on Jason's show and we were recording them from my house.
Yeah.
In my kitchen on Zoom.
Because none of us were going in.
Yeah. And she came by to bring a pie because I wanted to include her. And I opened the door and I just like she had this like face of how am I managing this? What is happening? What's going to happen to me? Like I could just see all of this stuff on her face.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm so glad you're here. Like, how are you doing? And we just had this like 15 minute really real exchange about how hard it was at that time and how they were trying to pivot and do
takeout
Thanksgivings, and she had just opened and trying to retain employees and not having business and trying to go online and do takeout, and like just that interaction we had at my front door has always made me root for her because I could see how hard it was, how hard it is. And I just always think about that when I go there, and I feel so happy for her that she made it, that the place is so successful.
Yeah.
And the food is delicious.
Yeah,
it is. And her aesthetic is really lovely too. Like it the really homeware and stuff she carries, please.
I know.
It's so cute.
It's very good. Okay, all right. What's your first one?
So my first one is just to tell you about this 12-course dinner I had in brief, because while you can't still have that dinner, you can still have that experience. I hadn't been for a while to Jones in the Park.
Oh.
When I moved out of St. Paul, Jones started out as like my neighborhood spot, and then we moved, and it's been a while since I'd been back. They had a dinner that was a wine dinner, and it just reminded me how amazing the food is that is happening with Joan and Susan at Jones in the Park. They're still cooking in the pizza oven that was Grandpa Tony's, which is also hilarious.
Yeah.
But the way that she does meat, the way that she does scallops, the vegetable side dishes were just so elevated and lovely, but also not like weird. They were just tasty, tasty little bites.
Yeah.
They have a multi-course menu. They do a 4-course every, as their whole, what is it called? Platform now.
Yeah.
You don't order off a menu. You order off of the, there'll be three of this or three of this and three of this. Yes. Thank you. I'm having a hard time explaining that. And you pick them. And meat is a choice. The day scallops are a choice. But if you haven't been to Jones in the Park yet, they just opened their really delightful patio, which
is such a great patio.
Rainy and crappy right now, but
it's a covered patio.
And it's so cute in there.
Yeah.
So give them a revisit if you haven't.
Yeah.
They also are really excellent with their wines, and we just had a delightful time, and I left there just like, oh, this place is still killing it.
Yeah. No, and it's seasonal, and it's, you know,
delicious.
What's funny is that I feel like I haven't gone, you know, in a long time, and then I was there twice this last year.
Oh.
So far, like in the last 6 months, I've been twice, and I was just like,
it's so good every
sometimes
time.
Sometimes you just find that space again. All right. So my second one is going to be Chilango, which have you been yet?
No.
Okay. So this is Jorge Guzman has opened his new, you know, Mex-Tex spot in the old Urban Eatery, which was, of course, you know, many things before that, too. In the Beach Club Residences, which is the Calhoun Beach Club over on Bidet-Mikoska. And I have to say, like, it is, I went last night, it was my friend Lisa's birthday, happy birthday, Lisa, and she is a tequila girl, so I was like, let's go see if we can just score a couple of seats at the bar, and we did, and it was packed. The place was packed.
Oh, I'm so glad for him.
And it stayed packed the entire night. And I know that, so there's been a little bit of chatter online because it was, they got slammed day one. And it was, you know, some people were like, oh, you know, it's the quality isn't up to snuff and all this stuff. And I just want to remind everybody is in a soft open. Like everybody that first week gets a pass. Like you should not be writing Yelp reviews or whatever.
Right.
On the first week of service, because everybody is just figuring it out.
And it's new.
And it's going to be a vastly different restaurant in a month. And so, last night we had great nachos. We had nachos with a ton of great cheese and braised, and the smoked brisket
Yum.
On the nachos. Hello, that is the move. And then we got a little side of the guacamole, which was beautiful, and the taquitos. And they were just great little cheesy potato stuffed taquitos.
I love a taquito.
Hello. And so, and the drinks, we had a margarita. I had their take on ranch water, which was a cucumber situation that was, I'm sort of into ranch water.
Can we just talk about what ranch water is? Is it just tequila and soda water?
Yeah, that's it. And so, you can do it with mezcal, you can do it with whatever, but it's sort of like the agave spirit and a soda water. Like you basically, it's just a little, it's like a highball, but tequila.
Yep.
And I think that's why I love it. I have been ranch watering this spring. And this one is great because it's infused with a little cucumber. And it gives it just that lightness that's better than a gin and tonic for me. Like, gin and tonics have a whole specific place. And it's not a whiskey in moment, but it's kind of somewhere in between. And I'm enjoying it.
I like it.
Yeah. So
could
anyway.
Could be your summer sips.
Yeah. And Chilango's a great, it's got a buzzy vibe. I'd say go. And like, again, expectations, they got rocked with like 350 people that first day, which is like three turns. That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
So,
okay,
what's your second?
My next one is a whole family of wines.
Oh.
Druin family of wines, distributed by the wine company, Druhin.
I think it's Druin.
They have a vineyard in France, and they also grow grapes and work out of the Willamette Valley in Oregon. And part of this dinner was having these eight different types of wines that they make. And I was just like blown away. And I went, they have them at Thomas Liquors. They have them at Serdix. They have them on the menu at Jones in the Park too. And I'm having a big dinner coming up, and I went and got like the whites, some of the reds. They have a beautiful champagne that was $69 a bottle, and it was lovely.
Oh, great.
So just Druin family of wines would be my second one.
Okay. All right. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We got stuff.
We have stuff.
Apparently there's and we are going to address, you guys, I know a lot of people are concerned and wondering about the Italian eatery. So we'll talk about that when we come back. This is the Weekly Dish on My Talk 107.1.
That's Michael. He's in the middle of a massage at the YMCA. He says he's glad he found out he can add well-being services onto his Y membership, like acupuncture, meditation, and nutrition classes. And massage. Oh, yeah, totally. So join the Y at ymcanorth.org.
Oh, look at our Lady Beyonce. Okay, so welcome back to the Weekly Dish. We are here. We are talking. We were a while back talking about what the it vegetable was going to be of the season. And we kind of went and had a question on the Facebook page. And I'm just here to officially proclaim that cabbage won.
Yeah, I don't really think it's a winning or losing, I guess, on that one. I sort of feel like, yes, cabbage is having its moment. And I think that's fantastic.
It was Kim Severson on March 10th in the New York Times that had like this whole rundown about cabbage.
Yeah. Which is true. It is totally. And the funny thing is, it really was. It is has gone from like that peasanty, stinky thing that people think of, and now it's like all over the place.
Yes.
Like chefs all over the place are using it.
Which is leading me to the discussion of Top Chef.
Oh, okay.
So Top Chef season 21, if you are not watching it, I would dip back into it because it's been excellent for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
Kristen Kish is taking over the Padma Lakshmi role, and she's really good at it.
Sure.
It's in Milwaukee.
It's in Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin, so
all it feels like a neighbor.
It does.
It feels like it's just right down the street.
And it feels like challenges and things you know. But there's been a few misses.
Oh, Jesus.
And I want to just say number one, and I would have never paid attention to this until I started doing television, but the graphics in it are so weird.
Oh, really?
They're just like cheesy and garish.
I think they've always been that way.
I just am noticing all of these weird graphics, and like there's one panel of like the words Wisconsin lit up. And they always walk out from there. I'm just like, oh, that is just so tacky.
I think they've done that every year, though.
It's just hitting me in a way that it's like, why are you using these cheesy graphics? They have had two weird challenges.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't articulate what it was that was bugging me, but you did in your newsletter. Because both Kurt and I watched. The first challenge was a Frank Lloyd Wright-inspired challenge.
Yeah.
So they toured Taliesin, they toured the aquarium, they went to all the places that Frank Lloyd Wright really had his stamp in Milwaukee, and then asked them to create a dish inspired by him.
Inspired by, like, the dichotomies that Wright is famous for in terms of, like, you know, contracting and expanding. And then, like,
it was so
dark
weird.
And light. And you're just like, and they put him into teams for it. So then not only are you maybe confused, but then you are confused and have to react to somebody else's confusion.
And
what?
Like, how do you put that into food? It just was really undefined. And then when they were judging it, it was undefined too. Like they liked one person's dish for one reason, but then two dishes later would not like someone's dish for that same reason.
It was that the Frank Lloyd Wright challenge to me was a bungle, and it was very clear that everybody was like, I don't know what to do. And everybody kind of like what they did was just like not great.
Yeah.
Like the one woman who put shrimp on some freaking cucumbers. I was like, really? You're Agua on Top Chile. Chef?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Like, it wasn't even agua chile. That's the best part. It was just shrimp on cucumbers. What?
Then they got it together.
Week,
and then they had a challenge last week that was, what's the guy's name from The Bear? Michael
Maddie Madison.
Okay, who is hilarious, and I was so glad he was on the show.
The best. I love him. He's so fun,
and he had super strong point of view about food and chefing, and but the challenge was chaos.
It's chaos cooking. And you know that when you walk into a challenge that's an elimination challenge, you walk into it and even Kristen Kish can't define it. Like, she's like, you know, it's kind of this. He goes, it's anything. It's like, blow it up. It's do whatever you want. And yet, how do you then, if you're doing whatever you want and that's your metric, how does anyone judge it? Because you're saying, if you're saying the assignment is to do whatever you want and then they do whatever they want, then how do you judge it? Because that's the assignment.
And some people, like one of these, there's one woman in the group that always kind of makes something from her restaurant, which doesn't seem super exciting or innovative to me, but she never gets kicked out. She's always just middle of the road and keeps going.
Okay.
And she did the same thing. And then another guy, like, really tried to knock it out of the park with these, like, puff potatoes, and it was sort of this, like, outer space theme, but they, like, didn't like that at all because it wasn't cohesive.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, and I remember.
That was the French guy.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then
Kayvon or whatever.
Yeah, the guy that won the challenge.
Danny.
Made a cabbage leaf, bringing it back to cabbage.
Yeah.
A cabbage leaf that was filled with a salmon mousse.
It was a scallop mousse.
Thank you.
Scallops. And it was a scallop mousse that he actually did already in the right challenge and was in the top four. So that's weird to me. Like, that he already made that once and that they never said a thing about it, that they didn't recognize that.
And he won.
But more weirdly is because they didn't know what they were judging. And I'm not kidding you. Like, his piece was the most composed, beautiful, like this beautiful.
It was like a puck.
It's a farsi, or farsa is the name of the dish that he's doing. But it was like this beautiful Zen moment. It was the most non-chaotic thing. Whereas Dan Dan did this incredible, like, puffed fried okonomiyaki, which is this like Japanese pancakes omelet situation, and then topped it with possibly everything. I'm like, that's chaos.
And it was on a funnel cake.
And they said, well, the funnel cake was the okonomiyaki, which is what he fried.
Oh, I see what you're saying. See? Okay.
So then he topped it all. And then they all said, we're all going to steal this idea and put it on our menus. And yet he didn't win. And I was like, that's chaos, though. And you said it was delicious, and it clearly is chaos versus this beautifully composed thing. Which is fine for the taste was there and everything else, but that wasn't chaos.
It felt chaotic as a watcher.
The whole thing felt chaos.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say it because we're on our own radio station, but that woman, the little judge, Sophia Rowe, drove me crazy. Like, I just...
Who even was she?
She's an Instagram... She's an influencer person who has turned into, like, she has a following and, like, all this kind of stuff.
I hated her, too, but I didn't know who she was.
Yeah.
I was just like, who is this woman that's just offering up all this weird criticism I don't even care about her?
Yeah, I didn't hate her, but I don't think they did a good... My problem is they didn't do a good job of contextualizing. If you're sitting at judge's table, I want to know, and you're giving an opinion that makes or breaks someone's, like, career here, I want to know who you are, and I want to know what stakes you have in the game. And I wish that they would do more of that. Right, yeah, now they put people at judge's table. I don't care if you're sitting at the dinner and you're making things.
Sure.
But if you're at judge's table, I want to know why you get to have that
opinion.
Yeah,
and on the quick fire, she had all of these, like, really I don't want to say aggressive. That's not the right word.
Christina Tosi?
It was just, the whole thing was not great.
Well, so I'm wondering, and this is my big thing with this Top Chef season is like, and this is like, I mean, they've done Chicago, but I mean, a Midwest city, you know, and a town and an area in a different way, you know, Kansas City or, you know, whatever, they've done different ones. Uh-huh. This is a different sort of thing. It feels like they don't know how to play it up and down at the same time. Like, they want to do cheese and dairy and like, it looks like next week we're getting sausages at the ballpark. So it's very pedestrian food that they're hitting. And yet they also want to, then they go the other way to the absolute extreme with these vague challenges. Instead
of,
like,
tell you what I think the answer to your question is.
They should be doing foraging morels, and then they should be doing, like, more of that stuff.
It is because it is the way that a West Coast person sees eating in the Midwest.
100%.
And it's all sponsored.
Yeah. So. Well, and there is that. And I have to say that the best, like the Minnesota or the Wisconsin cheese organization that does the advertising there, they are killing it. Their ads are amazing.
Beyond.
I don't know how you don't eat a whole block of Dunbarton Blue. 100%
agreed. Noticeably, like, yes. Wow, are they making the most of this? Good for them.
Yeah, I love that. So I am a fan of the fact that, and I'm still hopeful that, you know, but as far as like liking any of the contestants, like, I mean, I'm rooting for Dan Dan because I like his restaurant in Milwaukee. And then everybody else I could guess.
All right, we're coming back to talk more restaurants. We'll talk about Italian eateries.
Yeah, we will.
On The Weekly Dish, we'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever get that feeling where you know you need to get something off your chest? Holding stuff in really becomes a stressor. Things you want to mention to your boss, your partner, your parents. Bottling it up only makes things worse and start to make our life go sideways. But what can we do about it? Therapy is a great safe space to get things off our chest and figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Sometimes just putting those bottled up words out into the universe can be a big help, especially when it's in a safe space with your therapist. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You start by filling out a questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/weeklydish today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weeklydish.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Weekly Dish. And here we've been talking about restaurants.
Yes.
We've been talking about Top Chef.
And all the weird challenges.
Sorry if we spoiled that for you guys. We're just, you know.
We want you to watch it. Yeah, it is watchable. Even that we're complaining. It's held our attention for sure.
And I have to tell you that the Supper Club episode, you know, which was the one in between these two crazy episodes, Joy Summers from Star Tribune, good friend of the show, was there. And she didn't get any camera time. And I saw the back of her head like 3 times.
That's funny.
I was like, Joy's here! Joy's here! So, and I'm kind of surprised that we haven't had more. I mean, I'm sure Justin Sutherland is about to make an appearance moment.
I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
But maybe they're waiting to get down until the final bits. You know what I mean?
I was just going to say, that would be not surprising to see them make an appearance.
Okay, so let's talk about Italian eatery, because that's a thing that a lot of people have had questions about, which is, of course, the Southern Minneapolis, Nokomis area Italian restaurant that announced via its newsletter this week that they were closing.
Yes.
And they said, you know, we've had a wonderful time being a wonderful place for you, and it's we're sorry to be closing up, but we wanted to give everybody time. You have until the end of May, maybe early June, before they're gonna cut it off. The big question is why? Because it seems to have been a really popular and packed place.
Very.
I will tell you that I got a text when I was in New York this last weekend from someone who knew that it was coming. And he sent me a text saying, hey, I just want to give you the heads up that Italian Eatery is closing. And I said, what? I said, why? Aren't they always busy? And he said, yeah, they said that they quote unquote want to go out on top. And so I was like, okay, you know, I guess I understand that. But again, normally what would happen then is that you would then sell the business to somebody else or, you know, kind of go that way. I got another text from somebody, and I'm going to say these are all just industry people. Sure. I don't need to air out the dirty laundry of everything else. But there's people, because Eric and Vanessa Carrera, who are the owners, haven't really been talking to everybody. They haven't put out a statement as to why. It seems that I feel like the Strib has tried to get information from them and nobody is getting it. Other than, you know, it's just time and we want to close. I've heard from other people the idea that they just want to kind of move off into a different sector of business, like that they may have other projects that they're working on. But the biggest, of course, what people are wondering is if they do own the building, which they do, does this mean that they're basically going to sell? They've sold to a developer.
Yes.
It's possible.
I'm sure.
It's probable.
It feels almost 110% likely.
When you consider that the Cork Dork shop moved across the way and then that London Byerly's building went up and the values in that neighborhood are skyrocketing, I would say that, yes, they probably did sell that footprint to somebody.
Yep.
Especially and because they do seem to be keeping Due Focacciaria, which is a lovely quick serve spot, you know, and I think maybe that's what they're going to do.
Maybe that'll be on the first level of the new development.
Yeah, and I will say, too, full-service restaurants are hard. I mean, they're harder than quick serves. So
and you
maybe
could
that
do,
is a thing. Maybe you want to just, like, retire. I don't know.
You could do the little sandwichy quick serve thing and put some cheeses in there and make some picnic baskets. And
it's great. Yeah. Due Focacciaria has got great sandwiches and great focaccia. So that's what we think is, that's the rumor mill on that. So sorry to everybody who feels like they're losing their neighborhood Italian spot, but.
And the bartender that works there is a woman. Girl. Thank you. Yeah. I want to just mention her because I know she listens to the show.
Yeah. No.
She's worked there for like 10 years, I think.
Yeah. No. Well, yeah, probably. And she's a legend in the bar community. And we'll let's talk about her more later.
Okay.
I might have her come on the show.
Please do, because she was delightful. And
I've known her for so long.
You think about, like, in this situation, she's worked there 10 years. So, like, those are the people that.
But she's known for working at Filio back in the day.
Okay.
And that's her legendary
status. Think of all the good
status.
Stories she has.
Good Lord.
All right, so yes, let's get her if we can.
Okay.
So I just wanted to say, okay, if you're lamenting Italian eatery,
right?
Maybe we should offer out some suggestions of places that would be others to consider.
Yeah.
Prima would be one.
Yep.
54th and Lindale, very family driven.
Yep.
Kind of that same family energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that would be a good one. We also mentioned Broder's.
Broder's is perfect. You know what I mean? Broder's has that neighborhood vibe. It's got a lot of, like, you know, great dishes. Obviously, it's been around for 175 years. They know what they're doing.
Not in the neighborhood, but one that gave me that kind of same feeling initially was Estelle.
Yeah.
Over in St. Paul. If you haven't been there yet, it is Spanish and more like tapas inspired.
Yeah. But like Mediterranean.
And super delicious.
Yeah. You also have like Ito, downtown Minneapolis. That's a little bit more of a, you know, it's not so much a neighborhood spot, but it is a pop in and grab a couple, you know, grab a great pasta, grab a great pizza, get
Carmelo's
a good glass of wine.
Would be in St. Paul, very family driven.
Yep. I would say even like Bar La Grassa is sort of in that same vibe, although that's like such a huge endeavor for people in terms of like, you know, you have to get a reservation and stuff, where I felt like IE was like a place where you could just like pop in.
Yes. Can we talk about Bar La Grassa for just one second?
Sure.
There was an article, and maybe it was even in your magazine, about like why Snack Shop, their snack place.
Snack bar?
Yes. Why that isn't like so busy and doing as well as the other places, and what they're doing with it in terms of a concept. And like they were really having a hard time like understanding why it's not as well regarded as their other places. And so they're reconcepting it and doing more.
They're not reconcepting it. They're just adding some
more of a multi-course.
They're just doing a tasting menu that's affordable during the week. So a $55 tasting menu during the middle of the week. And I will tell you that I think that across the board, I'm kind of working on a story for this.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. But I mean, it's the idea of like, I've been chatting with everybody to find out. Q1 is very interesting this year. And I feel like it's been.
Can I guess?
What are you going to guess?
As the eater of the group, like, I'm just going to guess why Q1 was interesting.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like the restaurants that are destination restaurants have done okay. And I feel like a lot of the other, I don't want to say fast casual because that's not it, but that next level down, not like appointment dining, not like a fancy dinner, or fancy date. Those are the ones I think that are struggling.
Well, I think there's a little bit more to it than that. And then that was years in my prediction over this last year. We're like actually from the pandemic onward, we said the high end stuff is going to be fine and the low stuff is going to be fine.
Yes.
It's the middle ground that's going to suffer. And I think we're looking a little bit at that, but I'm actually looking at the difference between downtown and suburbs as well. Like that's something that's interesting that has been popping up as I'm asking everybody I hang out with. I ask them, how is your Q1 and how are things going? And obviously there's differences, but I have heard from a couple people that downtown is actually up. People are like the sporting events and everything else that came downtown has helped.
Well, Kurt and I are doing the reverse. We're going downtown when everyone else is going to the suburbs because we don't have anything in Golden Valley.
But
we
this is the point, is that actually downtown is up from where it has been. So there are more people coming downtown. Conversely, the suburbs are feeling a little bit of a dip. But the truth of that is that the suburbs have been so up that dip is still pretty strong.
Right.
You know, so it's not like they are where they used to be. So, but it is that the downtowns seem to have been... I mean, I think that a lot of the sporting events and a lot of like the tepid winter, which made it easier to walk around downtown and park and everything else, has sort of pushed a little bit more business there. This is just the beginnings of my findings, you guys. I'm working on this to figure out what's up.
Here's something else, too, that is unrelated but related. Someone made a comment to me recently about the live entertainment business and music. And like, well... You know, outside of Taylor Swift, which is obviously she's going gangbusters, that the industry is down. And I was like, but we have to look at the fact that they came out of COVID with a like unprecedented record year, 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So the third year of two record years being down just means you're back to a little bit more than what you had level set. Like, we can't keep just having... In a business setting, you can't have record year after record year and then look at it and go, oh, well, live touring is down.
Yeah.
Because Live Nation is just cleaned up for the last 3 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you have to, when you're looking at trends, I guess, look at it in the context of more than just year over year.
Right. And I do believe that there's something wrong with when you only think of like... It's that profit-driven, only caring what the stakeholders and the shareholders, you know, are needing.
Because you can't
never mind everything else.
Get your money back.
I know. It is weird like that.
Farmers market season. Do you want to just talk a little bit about Minneapolis Farmers Market? We talked about is going through a Wednesday through Sunday model.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened sooner.
Well, they've been a daily market for 147 years.
I know,
years.
And it makes me sad that that's broken, that tradition is broken. But I also am like, well, when do you... purchase or go to buy food.
Well, most people, oh gosh. And I mean, I think it is smart. Even in Tepetzlan in Mexico, the huge market days were Sunday and Wednesday. And that makes sense. Like that complete. So would you Monday, Tuesday, maybe not need them? I mean, doesn't that save, you know, people from going and setting up and not having anybody to sell to?
And if you think about those farmers and like the perishability of what they're selling, like for them, if you can do 2 days of business heavy versus 5 days of business and it's the same amount, you're going to have less waste, right?
Right.
I thought it was smart and I get it. And I just, it was sort of sad from the standpoint of how many
tradition
years they
too.
Had done it. Yeah.
But I guess I'm sort of in that space where I understand like it's better to change and to kind of roll with something new than to continue to just like bleed out because you're, you know, so... I'm sort of like, if we got to knock some traditions down, we got to do it.
Oh,
I'm here.
Stephanie,
for it.
What else are you knocking down
over
there?
I'm
going
to knock so many things down. I'm about to like kick it all through.
Oh,
all the door.
Have you ordered your Ina Garten memoir?
No, I forgot.
Pre-order.
Okay.
It's going to be good, I think.
You think so?
I do. It's coming out in October. I'm a P1.
You're the bigger Ina fan than I am.
But she's, I think, had a really interesting life. Like, I think it's going to be right up there with Queenie for me of... Julia Child.
How many people cosplay Ina Garten? I think that to me
it also is
the
excellent.
Number of humans who like have Ina parties and dress up like Ina and drink giant cosmos out of like decor.
And
you know,
there's
things.
That Instagram follow, and I can't think of the name of his account.
I don't know either.
Where he and store bought is fine kind of
there's like
emulates her
like,
too.
You come in and you have to like say an Ina phrase to this dinner party, the Ina party that they were having. And everyone's wearing denim and everyone's talking about Jeffrey. And it just cracks me up that she's like a millennial icon.
Yes.
I love it.
Someone called, Michelle, my producer, was like, well, Kurt's kind of like your Jeffrey. I'm like, my Jeffrey? Like, no, he is not.
No, he would balk at that.
He would just be like, what?
Yes.
He just came in and flipped a pancake once.
I know, seriously. All right, we're going to take a quick break, you guys, and then we're going to come back. We're going to wrap up the show.
Are you going to tell me why Maple Grove was nominated as the restaurant capital?
That's what we're going to talk about
when we come back on The Weekly Dish. All right, Stephanie, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Like, you can speak for all of the restaurant people in the world. Why did Maple Grove get called out as the restaurant capital? Was it just because they decided they were?
Yeah, they did. They called themselves
their Convention and Visitors Bureau.
do not use the words awarded. Do not use the words nominated. They basically said, we are. We are the restaurant capital of the world.
And okay.
Kudos for them. They hit the media cycle like a flamethrower. They basically got mentioned everywhere for the absurdity of being called the restaurant capital of the world. But I think it's the world of Minnesota.
Of Minnesota.
So it's hilarious that it's of Minnesota even because, of course, there are a lot of restaurants in Maple Grove. It's just that none of them have offices based here, you know, or like very few.
Yeah.
Most of them have addresses in many other states as well.
Like I could, other than Three Squares, I was having a hard time thinking of any that were even like locally owned.
Yeah, there's like a couple. I mean, you want to talk
Pittsburgh
about
Pittsburgh Blue, I guess. Malone?
Well, Pittsburgh Blue is a mini chain, you know, and so is even our lovely Steph Shimp. They have Three Squares up there.
Yep.
That's, I mean, Blue Plate is a mini chain, you know, it's like, so I'm not mad about that. They just don't have a lot of independents, you know, and a couple of the independents who were up there have not been able to have a good, you know, an easy time at it because they have places. Like,
and remember they like drove or supposedly drove out Hope Breakfast Bar.
Yeah. They said no to them, which I think is hilarious. And then they said that because of parking, this place is an ocean of parking lots.
Yes.
Like, what are you thinking?
It was a weird reason to not allow them.
But they basically said, the hard part for me is like featuring Maple Grove's Restaurant Row on Main Street. It's like Broadway Pizza. Okay, that's local, but it's also a massive, it's our biggest pizza chain. You know, Buca di Beppo, again, a national, not even owned by us anymore. Chipotle, Cold Stone Creamery, Crave, Five Guys, Granite City, you know, Naf, Noodles and Company, Panda Express, Panera, Pittsburgh Blue, you know, all of these. And then Tono Pizzeria is a locally owned.
Yes.
But again, also multi-unit. And there's nothing wrong with multi-unit. Yogurt Lab is like all that. It's just that it's, you know, there's a difference between multi-unit and an independent. And that is one of those weird things that I think, you know, it's like we used to kind of all play that we're against chains because we want to be celebrating the locals. But then when the locals start growing and then you see this multi-unit thing happening, where like, you know, Danny Del Prado has a million restaurants, but he's still considered independent. What is it? What is the metric that makes it a different thing?
Well, for me, there's no, every single restaurant you just mentioned in that long list.
Restaurant Row.
I can find somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I don't really need to go to Maple Grove.
Right.
Like maybe
that's a good point.
I live in Golden Valley, so I'm not even that far from it.
Right.
And Golden Valley has like one restaurant, maybe three. And
but you can come to Pittsburgh or you can come to like Edina or you can come to, you
like
know.
Like I can go to, yes. So for me, that's just like, there's no reason.
And it's sort of, so the idea of it being, I think it's hilarious that they're like, nobody else had claimed
it. It was smart of them.
Nobody else claimed Restaurant Capital of Minnesota. So having them do that is hilarious and great. But, you know, there's also, there's a couple places that are obviously like Brick and Bourbon is a local that's, you know, not on that strip. But again, they have multiple places.
Yep.
I'm trying to look and see if there's a place on here that's listed that is just got one. And I don't. So far, I don't really see one. Oops. But I do think that the other thing is that it's basically, you know, it's if you are looking, what I do like about Maple Grove and the fact that there the concentration is if you know, like you have a bunch of errands to run or shopping things to do and you're trying to get it all done in a shorter amount of time, you can find a Target, an Old Navy, a Cub, you know, all of that, all those things that are maybe you need to go to, you know, I don't know, mailboxes, et cetera, but you also need to go and do all these other things, your UPS store. It's all going to be there, and then you can go get a drink afterwards. You can find many, many a bar. And, like, you may then want to go, okay, then I'll pick up some Jersey Mike's and head home, or I may, you know, pop into Malone's Bar and Grill before I leave. So, I don't know. I love the fact that they list McDonald's on here, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's, you know, Nadia Cakes, she's on there. And, you know, Nautical Bowls, they're a local, again, a chain. So for me, one of the things that I want to know about is like, so restaurants that are chains tend to have the idea that they streamline their, you know, when you're a chain, you have buying power. That's the best reason to become a chain is so that you have buying power so that you can then get better deals on things. But then that creates the homogeny. That creates where you have the exact same thing wherever you go.
Right.
And so then that becomes exactly what you're saying. Why do I need to go there if you're the same thing over here?
And it's all the same.
And then here's the other thing. It tends to get watered down. It tends to be less special because you know, you're going for like the best deal that you can get because you can get deals.
Yeah.
And then maybe that isn't going to be the best thing, you know, but then you, and if you're in one area and you want to do something special, you can't because like not everybody else can't do it.
Right.
So that's the hard part about the chain aspect of it.
I am going to bring you next week a bunch of hot sauces. You know why?
Oh, okay.
Are you ready for some hot sauces? I feel like I have hot sauce like you have liquor.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I probably have 40 bottles of hot sauce right now.
I do too. And I have them and I kind of feel bad about it. Because then all of a sudden I'm like, well, I haven't used that one up and it's clearly turning brown.
Do you keep them
in your fridge?
No, but I still eat them when they're brown.
Yeah, I do too.
Pepper and Spoon Hot Sauce Festival is coming May 4th. It will be at Back Channel Brewing. It's 1 to 5. And you can try all kinds of sauces in the Twin Cities. I'm judging a bunch of them. Really great hot sauce game in this town.
Yeah. Oh, are they all locally made?
Yeah. So many good ones.
Yeah.
And I'm judging the fruit category, which is fascinating, but also the sheer pepper category.
Yeah.
And you have to pace yourself because like the very first one I tried in my group of 20 was the hottest one I've tried so far.
Oh.
And it kind of burned me out. So then I have to come back to it. I can't do it all at once because I can stop tasting.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot
it's
of good.
Is that Back Channel Brewing? The finals are? So then are you judging a category and then other people are judging other categories or how does it
we
work?
We are judging categories and then all of our judges come together and they pick the winners. But when you go to this event, you can try all the sauces.
Who are the other judges?
Andrew Zimmern, Mike Germain from
328 Grill.
Yep.
Zimmern's doing it.
Yep.
He's
and then
come
there's
and
a couple other ones. No, we don't have to go.
Oh,
we're just judging and preparing our entries.
Okay.
And I did it last year too, and it was super fun. But like again, I have probably 25 left to get through between now and Monday. So I have to like keep coming back to it.
Wow.
And I'm tasting on a chip and then I'm tasting on eggs.
Oh, okay.
Kind of just get a different fat.
Yeah, a little fat does make a difference. That's true.
But if you're interested in hot sauces, I think people will have a good time and it'll be a fun event.
Love it.
And I found a new sauce that I'd not heard of before that I'm intrigued by, Sembo's sauce.
Oh. I think I've heard of that, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. So there you go.
Lots of stuff besides the big thing of hearing about Italian eatery. A lot of other things are happening. Hark Cafe in Minneapolis is closing their retail, their storefront. They're going to go to wholesale and do dessert catering, which is great. Ramen Shoten in Eat Street Crossing is now switching over. As of May 1, they'll close, and they're going to become staff meeting, which is going to open there, which is going to be a different kind of fun thing. So it's kind of a, you know, to me, it's not too much of a loss. But I do want to say go support Zenbox Izakaya because the road construction is a serious issue. And next week, we are going to talk about that.
Please, if your favorite restaurants are in road construction zones, go to them. They need your support.
Ciao, ciao.